From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief. Hey, it's Chloe. August 2nd, 10 stories, 1 trial, 3 reviews, 6 takes you can actually use. Let's get into it. First, from Ajiriaki, the joy and beauty list. I'm glad you asked. Here's the quick rundown of what the author called the joy and beauty list. First, they reminded themselves and us that stepping away from the screen when you feel stuck can actually boost productivity. A short walk, a museum visit, or just sitting in a garden can reset the brain, and they tried that while working on a new book. Next up was a film called In Waves, an animated French language adaptation of a graphic novel about surfing, love, and friendship. The creator chose an indie filmmaker over big studios because the director's love of water felt authentic. It's now on Netflix with an English version slated for winter, and the reviewer says the colours and story moved them to tears. The third highlight was an Ezra Klein podcast episode featuring author Gary Steingart. He talks about how our culture of constant optimization makes it hard to enjoy simple pleasures, and he's preparing an essay collection called The Sensualist that celebrates joy. The conversation feels like a gentle nudge to let ourselves indulge in what feels good. Finally, the piece touched on a UCLA magazine article that found acts of kindness can lower depression and loneliness more than self-care alone, reinforcing the power of connection. The author also revisited classic Hollywood movies, How to Marry a Millionaire, All About Eve, and Auntie Mom, finding comfort in their witty dialogue and stylish settings, even while noting some outdated and offensive moments in the latter. All in all, it's a reminder to seek out small, beautiful experiences and let them lift us through the late summer stretch. Next, second, from Gluten Morning, chocolate cherry buns. I've been thinking about those little things that make a day feel softer, and this piece is exactly that. A collection of tiny comforts people swear by, from boiled egg hikes to socks with tiny pizzas. The author adds their own favourite, chocolate cherry buns, a warm, slightly sweet treat that feels like a hug for the senses. The recipe makes 6 buns. You start with 150 grams strong white flour, a tablespoon of cocoa powder, a tablespoon of caster sugar, a pinch of salt, and a teaspoon of instant yeast. Mix in lukewarm milk, knead for 4 minutes, then fold in softened butter, and knead a few minutes more until the dough is smooth and elastic. After a first rise of 1 to 2 hours, shape the dough into balls. Let them proof another half hour, and brush with beaten egg. While the buns rest, sweeten cream cheese with honey or a bit more sugar. Then press a small indentation into each bun, fill with the cream cheese, and top with 4 or 5 cherry halves. Bake at 200 ikijū, 180 degu fan, for 12 to 15 minutes, sprinkle with crushed pistachios if you like, and enjoy them warm or cooled. It's a simple, comforting bake that fits right into the soft edge list. Up next, third, from The Secret Sauce by Shred Happens. Chicken Caesar Salad Pizza. Hey, I just read Arash's Chicken Crust Caesar pizza recipe. So it's basically a low-carb, high-protein pizza where the base is ground chicken baked super thin, then topped with a classic Caesar salad. He mixes raw chicken thighs with garlic, egg, spices and cheese, spreads it on a pan, and bakes it about 15 minutes at 425°F until crisp. The dressing is a quick blend of avocado oil, mayo, Greek yogurt, Dijon, apple cider vinegar, lemon, garlic, anchovies, optional, and parmesan, then tossed with chopped romaine. He piles the salad on the hot chicken crust, adds extra parmesan and cracked pepper, and serves. Nutritionally, it's about 489 calories and 41g of protein per serving, so it fits a high-protein, low-carb plan nicely. If you like the idea, the recipe is in his new cookbook, but there's no pressure to buy. Just a fun twist on pizza if you're up for it. and then. Fourth, from Leela. August 2026, newsletter. I spent a whirlwind weekend in Sao Paulo, waking each morning to a bright fruit platter of guava, starfruit, papaya, and mango that set a sunny tone for the day. Breakfast turned into a sweet beiju crepe filled with strawberries and Nutella, and I slipped in visits to the Pinacoteca and the MASP, where Brazilian paintings sat alongside a few Van Gogh pieces. Evenings were a mix of culinary and cultural treats, a melt-in-your-mouth steak at De Betty with roasted vegetables that stole the spotlight, followed by Don Pasquale at the intimate Teatro Municipal. I capped the trip with coffee, pão de queijo at Haddock Lobo, and a cosy stop at Coffee Lab where I found a chicken cookbook that inspired a spicy, coconut-rich recipe I tweaked for home. The whole experience felt like a perfect balance. Fresh fruit, art, opera, and food that lingered long after the flight home. Next, fifth, from Lindsay Mack's Complexity Edge, Why Sapiosexuals Are Narcissist Magnets. So I was reading about sapiosexuals, people who are really drawn to intelligence in a partner, and how they can sometimes end up in relationships with narcissists. It's not that they're not smart or capable of making good choices, but rather that their emotional needs and cognitive wiring can lead them to be attracted to people who seem to offer a deep intellectual connection. For people who are neurocomplex, meaning they have conditions like autism or ADHD, the world can be overwhelming, and intellectual conversations can feel like a safe space. This can create a strong attraction to someone who seems to understand and appreciate them on a deep level, even if that person is actually a narcissist who will ultimately hurt them. It's a complex dynamic that's not just about being attracted to the wrong person, but about a deep-seated desire to be seen and understood. The author, who is a therapist and also identifies as sapiosexual, notes that this pattern is something they've observed in their clients and also experienced personally. The idea is that intellectual intimacy can feel like a refuge for people who are neurocomplex, and it's not just about being smart or enjoying deep conversations, but about feeling safe and understood. When someone comes along who seems to offer that, it can be really compelling, even if it's not a healthy relationship in the long run. The author is trying to explore this dynamic and understand why it happens, rather than just blaming the sapiosexual person for being attracted to the wrong person. It's a pretty nuanced and compassionate take on the issue, and it's clear that the author is coming from a place of personal experience and clinical observation. They're not trying to judge or shame people who have been in these situations, but rather to understand and help them navigate their emotions and relationships. Overall, it's a thought-provoking piece that highlights the complexities of human relationships and the ways in which our emotional needs and cognitive wiring can influence our choices. That's the read. Small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow. New here? Grab your own free feed at storyflow.com. It only takes a few seconds.